Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Genesis chapter 27. I'm going to cover verses 1 through 29 as we discuss Isaac blessing Jacob instead of Jacob's older brother Esau. Our context is this. In the last part of chapter 26, we see Isaac making a treaty with Abimelech of Gerar, which was about 20 miles or so to the northwest of Beersheba, where they are now in this chapter 27. So we start down in Genesis 27, verses 1 and 2. Now it came about when Isaac was old and his eyes were too dim to see, that he called his older son Esau and said to him, "My son." And he, Esau, said to Isaac, "Here I am." Isaac said, "Behold, now I am old and I do not know the day of my death." Now Isaac is said to be old here in verse 1. He's generally thought to be 137 years old, to be precise. This is according to Gil, Clark, and Jameson, Foss, and Brown, all three of them. Why? Because Isaac was 137 years old when Ishmael died, and Ishmael's death might have gotten Isaac to start thinking about his own death. Ishmael is Isaac's half-brother, and you notice that in verse 2, Isaac says, "I do not know the day of my death," so he's thinking about dying, so he's thinking about passing the birthright on. Now, Isaac was 180 when he died. If he's 137 years old now, that means there are 43 more years to go before he dies. So he's thinking about dying now, but he hangs on for another 43 years, which is interesting. How do we know he was 180 years old when he died? Because of Genesis 35, verse 28. Now the days of Isaac were 180 years. 43 years. And those 43 years, he was blind because he couldn't see Isaac in this little story here. 43 years of being blind. Ooh, that doesn't sound so good. Now why does the author of Genesis, Moses, why does he say that Isaac's eyes were too dim to see? Well, that would explain why Isaac didn't know Jacob when Isaac was blessing his son, thinking Jacob was Esau, because he was blind. He couldn't see. Now, we have some options as to why Isaac intended to give Esau, not Isaac, the blessing. Now, think about this. There's a question. Does Isaac know that Esau has sold his birthright to Jacob for the lentil stew and bread? Does he know that? Well, we don't know. The scripture doesn't say. I assume he knows it, because I can't imagine something like that big would escape notice in the family there. Now, he knows it, but nonetheless, he's going to try to give the blessing, the birthright to Esau by blessing Esau, because Esau's the oldest son. And here's some options as to why Isaac intended to give Esau the blessing. Well, first of all, the obvious reason, it was the usual legal custom to give the inheritance to the older son. That's one reason he might have gone to Esau instead of Jacob, despite knowing that Jacob had bought the birthright from Esau. The second reason as to why Isaac intended to give Esau the blessing was Isaac had a natural partiality for Esau. Genesis 25:28 says this, "Now Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game, but Rebekah loved Jacob." Now that doesn't mean that Isaac hated Jacob. It just means he favored Esau, which of course is a parental no-no, and it led to all sorts of family problems later on, as it will do today. Well, that's another reason he might have wanted to give the inheritance to Esau instead of Jacob. Third reason he might have wanted to do so is that we can speculate that Isaac had not heard of Esau's sale of Esau's birthright. And so therefore, he naturally wants to give the birthright to Esau. Now, as I said, I don't really believe that. I find it hard to believe that the word would not have gotten around to Isaac. Maybe they kept it from him because he was old and blind. Maybe he didn't know. But Rebekah knows and doesn't tell Esau, her husband. Well, if that's true, that doesn't say much for spousal togetherness and communication, does it? However, Rebekah could be so much enamored of Jacob as opposed to Esau that she might not have told him because she was scared of how Isaac might react and how he might take measures against Rebekah's favorite son, Jacob. We don't know. But it is possible that Isaac had not heard of Esau's sale, Esau's birthright, and so perhaps that's why he goes ahead and tries to give the birthright to Esau instead of Jacob. Fourth reason why he might have tried to give the birthright to his son Isaac, he might have forgotten the transaction. He might have been told by Rebekah, as John Gill says. He might have been told, but then he forgot because he's an old man. His memory's bad. fifth possibility of why Isaac gave the birthright to his son Esau rather than to Jacob is Isaac may have thought that the transaction was improper. This is John Gill's idea. Isaac might think, hey, Esau, you have got no business selling your birthright to your younger brother Jacob. And besides, Jacob extorted you. You were hungry. And this was a bogus transaction. I'm not going to honor it. Now, if this is so, if Esau thought this way, then that means he would have doubted what Rachel had heard from God, assuming Rachel had communicated it to him. Remember when Rachel said, when God appeared to Rachel and said, the older will serve the younger? Well, if Isaac had heard that, and if he had believed Rachel, that Rachel had heard from God, then he would, you would think, give the blessing to Jacob, not Esau. But despite the fact of what he heard from his wife, he must have thought, well, my wife, I don't care what she says. I don't think this is a proper transaction. I want to give the birthright to my favorite older son, Esau. Fifth or sixth option from John Gill is that Isaac may have misunderstood the details of the transaction. Maybe Rebekah did tell Isaac that God had said the older shall serve the younger. But Isaac may have thought that the prophecy referred to posterity, to his seed, to his descendants, to his offspring, but not to the individuals Jacob and Esau. That's reasonable. That's John Gill's idea. However, Jason Thomas and Brown don't think it's quite so reasonable. They say it is difficult to imagine that Isaac was ignorant of the divine purpose in light of the clear oracle to Rebekah, assuming that Rebekah told Isaac. Genesis 25:23 says this, "The Lord said to her, 'Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your body, and one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger.'" That's pretty clear. So maybe Isaac misunderstood what that meant. After all, he's an old man. He might not realize what's going on. He might, and especially if you read Genesis 25:23, it says one people shall be stronger than the other. So it sounds like the peoples, two peoples will be separated from your body. So it's reasonable to think that Isaac was thinking the prophecy referred to people's descendants, not to Isaac and Jacob personally. That's reasonable. That's, in my opinion, it's reasonable. That's according to John Gill. Although Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown tend to disagree with that. So there's lots of speculations as to why, but if one of those is true, then it makes sense that he tried to give the birthright to Esau rather than Jacob. So it's not surprising that he did this. Esau responds to Isaac and says, "Here I am." In the NIV Study Bible says that Esau is actually answering his father Isaac with the words of a servant. "Here I am." That's what they said when they were called as a servant. So Esau is being very obedient here. I don't know if he knows why Isaac is calling him, but he's very obedient and he comes. Verse 2, Isaac said, "Behold, now I am old and I do not know the day of my death." You know, if he thought he was going to die then, he was wrong because he had another 43 years to live on the earth. We go now to Genesis 27, verses 3 and 4. And Isaac is still speaking to Esau. "Now then, please take your gear, take your Esau's gear, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and prepare a savory dish for me such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, so that my soul may bless you before I die." So again, you see he's thinking about dying. He's also thinking about passing on the inheritance, and he wants a savory dish, and that's probably because he wants a ceremonial meal to go along with the blessing ceremony. And you notice that Isaac loves the field, hunting, game, savory dish. Sounds like venison. Sounds like people in South Carolina who love to eat deer. And that's so he was going to do what he liked doing in order to pass the inheritance on. People have wondered what does hunting game got to do with obtaining a blessing. I've just told you that he wanted to do it because he wanted to have that meal in a festive atmosphere banquet. Some other options are perhaps Isaac was testing the filial loyalty of his son before he gave the blessing. He's saying, are you going to go out and do what I want you to do before I gave you a blessing? I don't know. I can't imagine that a son would disobey such a simple request as that. That's not much of a test if you ask me. Now, Clark says it's more than just a festive meal to celebrate the passing of the meal, but it's a ceremonial meal. It's a meal that's supposed to stand for something, a ritualistic meal that says, this is the passing on of the blessing, so let's have a meal. Easterners love that kind of thing. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown speculate that Isaac needs to be strong for the ceremony of passing on the inheritance, so he needs some food. He's old. He needs to eat good before he has the ceremony. Well, that's interesting, but I don't believe that's what it is. I believe he just wanted to have a celebration, either ceremonial or just festive, or probably both. He wanted to have a meal to go along with the blessing. Isaac had a taste for wild game, by the way. Genesis 25:28 says this. Now, Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game. He liked wild. He liked venison. He liked wild deer or pheasants or whatever else it was they were hunting back then. All right, so Isaac has told Esau that he's planning to bless him. I want you to bring that food to me, that game to me, so that my soul may bless you before I die. Now, this, of course, would be an oral testament in effect. What do they call it in law? An oral will is a nuncupative will, fancy word that you'll never use again. They are almost, there's a few states in America where they're still valid. I think New York State is one, but usually in a literate society, oral wills are a no-no. They're not going to be effective. But back then, they didn't have a lot of literate people, and so oral wills were fine. And this is basically what we have here, an oral testament. He's passing on his wealth to Esau. He's planning on doing it. Now, let's look at some options as to why Esau ignored his earlier deal he had made with Jacob to give the inheritance to Jacob. First option, Esau was a crook. Well, I agree with that. The NIV Study Bible says Esau was wrong to do what he did. I think that's true because, I mean, he made the deal. It was a stupid deal, but he gave the birthright away fair and square. He didn't have to do it. He did it. He swore to his hurt, and he needs to abide by the oath that he made with his younger brother Jacob. Now, here's another option that might explain that Esau had ignored the earlier deal he had made with Jacob and had done it honorably and not dishonorably. This view says that Esau was distinguishing between a birthright and a blessing. Now, this is sort of an interesting question. Let's look at Genesis 27, verse 36, later on in this chapter. Then he, that's referring to Esau, is he not rightly named Jacob? Jacob means deceiver. For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. These two times, birthright and blessing, two different things. Birthright and blessing, sounds like it. And in fact, two different Hebrew words are used for birthright and blessing. That's not two different English words. Those are two different Hebrew words. And we go to Hebrews 12, 16, and 17, and we see another place where birthright and blessing are distinguished. Let me start with verse 16, Hebrews 12. That there be no immoral or godless person like Esau, who sold his own birthright for a single meal. For you know that even afterwards, when he desired to inherit the blessing, he was rejected. For he found no place for repentance, though he sought for it with tears. In other words, it was a done deal. He couldn't get out of it. Now, Adam Clark makes the point that this birthright that Esau sold, what it was, what it contained, that question has divided commentators, both ancient and modern. Well, let's ask the question, was Esau right in making a distinction? In other words, yeah, I sold my birthright, but I didn't sell my blessing, so I'm perfectly honorable when I sit here and get some game from my father Isaac so he can give me the blessing, because the blessing is different than the birthright. I don't believe that's legitimate, that you can make a distinction between birthright and blessing. In fact, the NIV Study Bible agrees with me and says that that distinction is meaningless. Here's what the exact quote is from the NIV Study Bible. Quote, the former, referring to the birthright inevitably led to the latter, the blessing, since both involved the inheritance of the firstborn. So the way I put it is, the birthright was the legal right to inherit the estate, and the blessing was the ceremony that conveyed the legal right, so they're the same thing, basically. So if you believe that, and Esau was wrong to do what he did, because he conveyed everything in this view, he had conveyed everything to his younger brother Jacob. And that's the theory I'm going to go on here, that Esau was a real jerk. Now let's look at some options as to what that birthright contained. Well, first of all, and this is what you'd normally think of, is that the birthright contained a double portion of the father's goods, that right of inheritance which comes from primogeniture. Double portion means if you have three kids, you divide the estate up into four parts, give the oldest son two parts, and then the middle son has one part for three parts, and then the youngest son has the fourth part, double portion. That comes from Deuteronomy 21:17. But he shall acknowledge the firstborn, the son of the unloved, by giving him a double portion of all that he has. For he is the beginning of his strength, to him belongs the right of the firstborn. So the right of the firstborn is double portion. Okay, so it's Jacob's now. Isaac has conveyed it away. Another option is to what the birthright contained. is that the person receiving that birthright would then succeed in authority over the family or the kingdom when the old man died, when the father died. 2 Chronicles 21:3, their father gave them many gifts of silver, gold, and precious things with fortified cities in Judah, but he gave the kingdom to Jehoram. Why? Because he was the firstborn. So the kingdom went to the firstborn. Well, okay. That's very similar to the double portion, though, because a kingdom, well, I guess a kingdom involves political authority as well as money. So that adds a little bit to the idea of birthright. Another idea that birthright contains, the idea that the person receiving the birthright is particularly consecrated to God. Exodus 22:29 says this, "You shall not delay the offering from your harvest and your vintage. The firstborn of your sons you shall give to me." So if the birthright goes to the firstborn and the firstborn is to be dedicated to God, that would mean that religiously the firstborn has special favor before God. I question that, but that's just another idea. Another idea is that the birthright contains an elevated honor compared to the other sons in the family, and the person receiving the birthright would be therefore next in honor to the parents. To back that up, we can read Genesis 49:3. "Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might in the beginning of my strength, preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power." So the firstborn has a special status, a special place in the family, and that's part of the birthright that was passed on, according to this view. As Adam Clark put it, the firstborn had a right of, quote, peculiar benediction. He was specially blessed in the family. Another idea is the birthright contained the sole right of conducting the service of God. We read in Numbers 8:18, "But I have taken the Levites instead of every firstborn among the sons of Israel." The idea here is firstborns did the priestly activities of the family, and so Numbers 8:18 is saying the Levites are going to do that now instead of the firstborn. Well, all of that's very interesting. And there's nothing that says that all of that might be. There's nothing that precludes the fact that all of these honors and distinctions might have been included in the birthright in addition to merely financial double portions. But at any rate, we're going to assume that Esau screwed up and gave it all to Jacob, and now he's trying to get it back from his father Isaac. In other words, Esau was a crumb bum. We go to Genesis 27:5-10. "Rebekah was listening while Isaac spoke to his son Esau." She was eavesdropping. "So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game to bring home, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, 'Behold, I heard your father speak to your brother Esau, saying, Bring me some game and prepare a savory dish for me that I may eat and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death.'" Again, you see, Isaac is contemplating his death, but he's still got 43 years to go. "Now, therefore, my son, listen to me as I command you." This is, of course, what Rebekah has overheard. "Go now to the flock and bring me 2 choice young goats from there." Well, let me back up. This is what Rebekah is now saying to Jacob. This is not what Isaac earlier said to Esau, as quoted by Rebekah. Now she switches to talking straight to Jacob. She says, "Now therefore, my son, listen to me as I command you." Listen to my son Jacob, listen to me as I command you. "Go now to the flock and bring me 2 choice young goats from there, that I may prepare them as a savory dish for your father, such as he loves." So basically what Rebekah wants to do is replace Esau's savory dish with Jacob's savory dish. "Then you shall bring it to your father that he may eat, so that he may bless you before his death." Well, like son, like mother. If Jacob was tricky and deceitful, Rebekah is just as bad. Rebekah's and Isaac's parental favoritism is just about to bear its poisonous fruit. Remember Genesis 25:28. "Now Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game, but Rebekah loved Jacob." So she is going to trick her own husband to benefit her favorite son. In this affair, she's deceitful as Jacob himself was, and that's a startling contrast to that beautiful virgin girl Isaac saw coming to him while he was in Beersheba, when Eliezer, or Abraham's servant, probably Eliezer, was bringing Rebekah back from Haran, or back from Syria, Padam Aram, and there she was, and oh, I'm sure she looked so beautiful. It says she was beautiful. She's beautiful. She's virginal. She got down off her camel. She covered her face with a veil. Oh, and now here she is, scheming away. Now notice that the overheard conversation between Isaac and Esau went like this at the end. "Bring me some game Isaac says to Esau, and prepare a savory dish for me that I may eat, and bless you, Esau, in the presence of the Lord before my death. In other words, this was a ceremony with witness. God was going to witness this ceremony. So this is a big deal. This was it. This was the reading of the will before the testator died, if you will. And God was going to honor it. In fact, the invocation of God's name made the blessing irrevocable. Now, if I were Esau and I took this to court, if they had courts back then, this is what I would say. Hey, I was defrauded. Jacob is defrauding me of my birthright. Now, of course, Jacob's defense would be, no, I'm not, because you sold the birthright to me. Now, notice in verse 8 that Rebekah is basically pushing Jacob into this transaction. She probably knew that Jacob would object to this because this is serious business. Cheating your father when he's trying to pass on his estate? My gosh. But now here's a question. Were her actions proper? Now here's an argument in favor of the proposition that Rebekah's actions were proper. She was carrying out God's prophecy that the younger would serve the elder. So why shouldn't she do that? Well, there's some arguments that she was not acting properly. Here's John Gill. In these, her sentiments, she was right, but wrong in the ways and means she took to get it for him. Here's what Jameson Fawcett and Brown says. She acted in the sincerity of faith, but in crooked policy, with unenlightened zeal on the false principle that the end would sanctify the means. And I agree with those two opinions. Sure, the younger were supposed to serve the older, but you don't go out trying to do God's will for him by cheating people. This is a great object lesson for modern-day Christians. We love to help God out with our schemes of flesh, just like Abraham wanted to help God out with Hagar. I need a son. You promised me a son, so I'm going to do it with a concubine. No. That's using the flesh. You know what Rebekah could have done? She could have just gone to Isaac and said, Isaac, I'm not going to cheat you. I'm not going to fool you. But do you remember that prophecy that I got that the younger would serve the older? And then maybe Isaac's natural piety, he was a religious man, he was a godly man, maybe his natural piety would have overcome his partiality for Esau, and he might have said, yeah, you're right, Rebekah, I need to give the inheritance to Jacob, my younger son. But we'll never know, will we, because she pulled this con on her husband Isaac. We go down to Genesis 27, verses 11 through 13. Jacob answered his mother Rebekah, behold, Esau my brother is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, then I will be as a deceiver in his sight, and I will bring upon myself a curse and not a blessing. But his mother said to him, your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice, and go, get them for me, get those two goats for me. Now Jacob said Esau was hairy, still hairy. He was born that way. He was hairy, and no doubt he continued to grow more hair, as John Gill puts it, Genesis 25:25. Now the first, that's Esau, came forth red all over like a hairy garment, and they named him Esau. He was hairy from his mother's womb. Verse 12, Jacob says, perhaps my father will feel me. Well, why would Jacob worry about his father feeling him? Well, because he's blind. He's got to feel him to see who he's talking to. Now, if Isaac figures out that Jacob's trying to cheat him, then Jacob says, I will be as a deceiver in his sight. Yeah, as a deceiver, you will be a deceiver in his sight, Jacob. And I will bring upon myself a curse, because Isaac is likely to say, curse you, Jacob, you tried to cheat me. So he's nervous about this little scheme that his mother is cooking up. You know, later on in the law, in Deuteronomy 27:18, we read this, cursed is he who misleads a blind person on the road, and all the people shall say amen. Well, Isaac was a blind man, and the law later on will say, cursed is he who misleads a blind man. Well, it wasn't codified yet in the law, but Jacob knew that he would be cursed for doing that. His father's going to get him. Now, note that Jacob is being scrupulous about the consequences of being caught. He is not scrupulous about the intrinsic morality of the deception itself, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say. He's not showing that he is a great ethical character here, a great ethical actor. He's just worried about getting caught. And then Rebekah says, your curse be on me. She had complete faith she would succeed in the deception, or she wouldn't have said that. Curse be on me. That's serious business. Put a curse on yourself. She had had an earlier prophecy that the younger would serve the older. And so she says, okay, I'm not worried about getting caught and having a curse be put on me by my husband Isaac. No word about it. Here's what Adam Clark says about this. What a dreadful responsibility did this woman take upon her at this time. The sacred writer states the facts as they were, and we may depend on the truth of the statement, but he nowhere says that God would have any man to copy this conduct. He often relates facts and sayings which he never recommends. Well, of course, we're not supposed to emulate Rebecca and all this cheating deception. Seems to me she was awful cavalier about being cursed. Because, I mean, after all, think about it. All Isaac has to do, if he worries, and we're going to see that he's worried about Esau being Esau. He thinks that Esau might actually be Jacob. He's worried about it, and all he has to do is wait to get till he gets both of them in his presence and say, okay, which one of you is Esau? Because that's who I want to give the blessing to. And so it seems to me this scheme has got a lot of potential of going bad. But she nevertheless said, let the curse be on me if we get caught. Genesis 27:14-17. So he went and got them. That's he is Jacob went and got them, the two goats, and brought them to his mother. And his mother made savory food such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the best garments of Esau, her elder son, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And she put the skins of the young goats on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. She also gave the savory food and the bread which she had made to her son Jacob. Now what they're basically trying to do is have this celebratory meal quickly before Esau got back from the hunt. Now Rebekah took the best garments of Esau. Some say that they were not only best, that they were actually holy, perhaps handed down from ancestors. John Gill says that some even speculate they were the clothes of Adam, which I think is ridiculous. That somehow Nimrod had got the clothes and Esau killed Nimrod to get them. That sounds like a bunch of traditional moonshine to me. Some say these garments were garments that were used for Esau to do priestly functions in the family. Even though this was before the law, remember, the oldest son often did priestly things in the family back then. Now, why all this speculation? Well, because it's hard to see what reason Rebekah would have for keeping the robes. Normally, Esau or his wives would be keeping them, but somehow they ended up in Rebekah's hands, but I don't really see any problem with that. I don't know. I think that's a lot of speculation that goes a little bit too far, but we do know that they're Esau's garments. Also, the two goat skins, the two young goats did double duty. The meat was used to prepare a savory dish. Rebekah used the meat to do that. And the skins were used for deception to put on Jacob's back of his hands and the back of his neck so that when Isaac felt him, he would feel hair and think, ah, hair, that's Esau. We go now to Genesis 27, verses 18 through 20. Then he, that's Jacob, came to his father Isaac and said, my father. And he, Isaac, said, here I am. Who are you, my son? Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. Bald-faced lie. I have done as you told me. Get up, please, sit and eat of my game, that you may bless me. Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have it so quickly, my son? And he, Jacob, said, because the Lord your God caused it to happen to me. All right, the first thing we notice is Jacob is suspicious. How did you get back from the hunt so fast, Esau? And Jacob allays that suspicion by saying, well, God just gave me a blessing in the hunt. I was very successful, and we got the animals very quickly, and so here I am. Now, why did Isaac doubt it was Esau? Well, first of all, he heard Jacob's voice, as we'll see in just a minute as we proceed. Jacob's voice, that's suspicious. Also, another reason Jacob is suspicious is because Esau could not have returned from hunting so quickly. In fact, he says it. He says, how did you come so quickly, my son? Now, you might think that Rebekah and Jacob would have thought of that and delayed their fake birthright meal, but they couldn't do that because Esau's going to come back sooner or later. And so Jacob and Rebekah really had no choice but to do the meal quickly to take care of the transaction before Esau got back, even if it aroused Jacob's suspicions. Now Jacob, posing as Esau, tells his father Isaac, get up. Isaac was probably lying down either because of his age or because of maybe he was sick. Get up. Now when Isaac said in verse 20, how did you come so quickly? Jacob responds, because the Lord your God caused it to happen to me. Jacob is employing one lie after another. That's a lie. He didn't have a quick hunt because God blessed his hunt. He just lied. Here's what Adam Clark says about Jacob. To attempt to palliate or find excuses for such conduct instead of serving This serves the cause of religion and truth. Men have labored not only to excuse all this conduct of Rebekah and Jacob, but even to show that it was consistent and the whole was according to the mind and will of God. So you see, some people have been out there, casuist, trying to justify what Rebekah and Jacob did. And I'm going to tell you something. There ain't no justification for this. They were cheats. I suppose these people that Clark is referring to are people that are trying to justify Jacob because he was fulfilling prophecy. But as I said before, Jacob is just one example of many who try to do God's will in the flesh. You don't need God's help in fulfilling his prophecies, especially when you resort to immoral activities. Now, after I finish running Jacob's character down and calling him a deceiver, let's point out something a little bit more positive about him. Jacob, before he came back from Haran getting his wife Rachel, he never spoke of God as his God. But after he came back from Haran getting his wife Rachel, he spoke of God as his God. So let's look at three scriptures before he went to Haran. Genesis 31:5. I see your father's attitude. This is Jacob speaking. Jacob is speaking to Rachel and Leah at the time. I see your father's attitude that it is not friendly toward me as formerly, but the God of my father has been with me. The God of his father Isaac has been with me. Genesis 31:42. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty. So Jacob calls God the God of his father, the God of Abraham, not his God, but Abraham's God. That's his ancestor, Abraham, not his immediate father. Genesis 32:9, Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac. So now he says, God is the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, but not the God of Jacob, not yet. But now after he returns from Haran, Jacob speaks of God as his God, as Jacob's God. Genesis 28:20-22. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, If God will be with me and will keep me on this journey that I take, and will give me food to eat and garments to wear, and I return to my father's house in safety, then the Lord will be my God. This stone which I've set up as a pillar will be God's house. That's at Bethel, Jacob's ladder, and all that. Genesis 33:18-20. Now Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padam Aram and camped before the city. He brought this piece of land where he had pitched his tent from the hand of the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. Then he erected there an altar and called it El Elohe Israel, which translated, according to the NIV note, is translated as God, the God of Israel. And of course, Israel is Jacob's other name, Israel. So this is the God of Jacob. I don't think Israel was called Israel back in patriarchal times. So that's the God of the personal Israel, God of Jacob. So that's interesting. But of course, that's in the future. We're still in before Jacob went to Haran, when he was calling God Abraham's God and Isaac's God, but not his God. So a little bit of detective work and speculation would say that Jacob might have gotten a little more spiritual as he got older. We go now to verses 21 through 25 in Genesis 27. Then Isaac said to Jacob, Please come close that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son Esau or not. So Jacob came close to Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau. He did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. Of course, the reason they were hairy is because they had goatskin on them. So he blessed him. So he, Isaac, blessed him, Jacob. And he said, Are you really my son Esau? Still suspicious. And he, Jacob, said, I am. Bald-faced lie. So he, Isaac, said, Bring it to me, and I will eat of my son's game that I may bless you. And he brought it to him, and he ate. That means the savory dish made out of the two goats that Jacob had gotten. And Jacob brought it, the meal, to Isaac, and he, Isaac, ate. He, Jacob, also brought Isaac wine, and he, Isaac, drank. So you see Jacob doing everything possible so his father will enjoy that meal before he gives all his money away. Now, twice he said, Let me come close so I can see whether you're really my son Esau or not. He wants to see whether somebody's trying to snooker him. He's trying to see whether his son Jacob might be snookering him. Well, that just tells me that Isaac must have known of Esau's sale of the birthright to Jacob, and he is suspicious of that. He's saying Jacob's coming to get his birthright instead of Jacob, which is exactly what was happening. Now, in verse 22, Isaac says that the voice he was hearing was the voice of Jacob at the hands of the hands of Esau. Well, that was enough to convince him, even though he was suspicious about the voice. It was easier to explain away the voice than the hairy skin. I mean, you feel hair, a hairy skin, you're going to think, you wouldn't dream that your son Jacob had sheepskin on his hands. You just wouldn't think that. So he said, well, this must be Esau. The voice does sound a little bit like Jacob, but there must be an explanation for it, Isaac is thinking. John Gill speculates that Isaac may have thought Esau's voice was altered upon hastily coming from the field. He's running. This is my speculation. Maybe he was just thinking he was hearing Esau's voice wrong. He was getting up in age. He's old. He might not hear as good as he used to. But for any, whatever reason, Jacob pulled off the deception and Isaac bought it. Now, verse 23, the scripture says that Isaac blessed him. So he blessed him, blessed Jacob. Now there's a problem because also in verse 27, Isaac blessed Jacob. Verse 27 says, so he came closer and kissed him. That's when Jacob came closer and kissed Isaac. When Isaac smelled his clothes, he blessed him and said, ah, so now we've got two blessings. Well, how do you resolve that problem? Verse 23 is probably a common blessing. Congratulations on such a quick, successful hunt, as John Gill puts it. But the real important blessing, the patriarchal blessing, the passing of the birthright, the passing of the estate, happened in verse 27 when Isaac blessed Jacob. Now in verse 24, when Isaac said, are you really my son Esau? The NIV Study Bible notes that Isaac doubted all the way to the end of the charade. He just wasn't sure. So that shows how remarkably close Rebekah and Jacob's scheme came to failing. Now, this is a question I ask. If Isaac has that much doubt about who that son was that he's giving his inheritance to, why could he just not waited until both sons were present? He could have said to Jacob, who was masquerading as Esau, he could have said, Esau, why don't we just wait here until Jacob gets here and we'll have a big ceremony with everybody present? That would have been the easiest thing to do. But he didn't do it. And therefore, Isaac's negligence in God's providence fulfilled the prophecy that the younger would serve the older, the prophecy that was given to Rebekah. He's an old man. I guess you can forgive him for being old and careless, but he really should have waited if he was that suspicious, in my humble opinion. Genesis 27, verses 26 and 27. Then his father Isaac said to him, Jacob's father Isaac said to Jacob, please come close and kiss me, my son. So he came close and kissed him. And when he smelled the smell of his garments, he blessed him and said, see, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Isaac is still not trusting. And that's why he said, come close and kiss me, because he wants to smell. This is perhaps a speculation. He could better smell Jacob's breath in his clothes, as John Gill says, which would help Isaac identify which son it was. The smell was the smell of the field. That would much more likely belong to Esau, of course, because he liked to plant crops and liked to hunt. And that smell might have finally allayed Isaac's suspicions, although the smell may have come from aromatic spices, as Adam Clark says, which that would not imply that the clothes were actually in the field. But probably the smell of his garments smelled like they had been out in the country. And that finally convinced Esau that he was giving the inheritance to, convinced Isaac that he was giving the inheritance to Esau. Another idea is this: he smelled the garments and said, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field. That might be poetic. He's waxing poetic there. That's my speculation. Probably not. It's probably actual smell. So let's summarize the options of what Isaac is thinking here about the smell of the clothes. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, option number one, the smell existed because the clothes had actually been in the field and thus picked up that outdoor smell. Option number two from Adam Clark, the smell came from aromatic spices. Option number three from yours truly, Isaac is merely making a poetic reference. Here's option number four from yours truly also. The goat skins might have added their smell to the clothes, because remember, the clothes were worn by Jacob, who had put goat skins on his hands on the back of his neck. And so if you smell the clothes, you're going to smell the goat skins too, and that's going to sound like a smell from outdoors. But at any rate, if Isaac is suspicious, and he comes close to ask his son to kiss him so he can smell. And blind people, you know, they have an enhanced sense of smell. He feels the hairy skin. He smells the outdoorsy smell of the garments. The voice sounds a little strange. That doesn't make sense, but the hairy skin and the garments. And that explains how Jacob got away with his gambit here. We go down to verses 28 and 29. And this is Esau talking to Jacob, whom he thought was Esau. Now may God give you the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and an abundance of grain and new wine. May people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master of your brothers and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be those who curse you and blessed be those who bless you. Now the NASB says fatness of the earth. It was that Isaac is giving to Jacob, actually, fatness of the earth. Well, NIV has richness of the earth. This was fulfilled in Deuteronomy 8:8 when the promised land was described as, quote, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey. And, of course, John Gill, who likes to make types out of everything, he says all the fatness of the earth is a type of the blessings of the gospel. There's prosperity in the promised land materially and there's spiritual prosperity in the kingdom of God. Well, that's not a bad type. I like that all right. Now, Isaac said that nations are going to bow down before his son. When was that fulfilled? Well, the times of Joshua and the judges, the Canaanite nations were conquered and subdued. So that's true. Nations bowed down to the descendants of Jacob. How about in the time of David, the Philistines, the Moabites, the Syrians, the Ammonites, and the Edomites all became subject to David. These are pagan tribes right around the peripheral borders of Israel. They became subject to David. So that means that nations did bow down to the descendants of Jacob. How about in the times of Solomon, 1 Kings 4:21? Solomon ruled all the kingdoms from the Euphrates River to the land of the Philistines and as far as the border of Egypt. They offered tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. Nations bowed down to the descendants of Jacob. Now, of course, all that bowing down to the descendants of Jacob, that is ultimately fulfilled when Christ and his church will rule the world. Oh, the sooner the better. Now, this blessing that Jacob gave probably came from Abraham. Genesis 12:2, this is God speaking to Abraham upon entering into the promised land. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing to the nations. That's very similar to what Jacob says here. Cursed be those who curse you, and blessed those who bless you. That sounds just like that same pronouncement that God gave Abraham upon entering the promised land in Genesis 12:3. And I will bless those who bless you, and the ones who curses you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. So you see the similarity there. And of course the reason it's similar, I'm sure, is because God is just, well, excuse me, not God, this is Isaac. Isaac is repeating the promises that he's heard in his family from Abraham, from his father Abraham, and I'm sure Abraham instructed him on what God had told him about all these covenant promises. And so he's just passing the promises down the line. Now in verse 29, Isaac says to Jacob, thinking he was Esau, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Well, in saying that, Isaac unwittingly fulfilled God's promise to Rebekah. Genesis 25:23. The Lord said to her, to Rebekah, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your body, and one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. Now, one people shall be stronger than the other is ambiguous. We don't know whether that's Esau at first, the Edomites are stronger than the Israelites, or vice versa. But at the end, the older shall serve the younger. Oh, yes. Esau served Israel, Jacob, because Esau was conquered by King David and was a subsidiary tributary nation. Paid tribute, taxes, money. Now, that shows how God sovereignly takes the acts of free will and uses them for himself. Isaac, of his own free will, blessed Esau, and in doing so created descendants who fought each other just like God intended for it to happen, because he said the older shall serve the younger, and that's exactly what happened. Isaac got snookered by Jacob, and Jacob's acted freely, and Rebekah acted freely, and Isaac acted freely, and the result was God's prophecy was fulfilled. Free will never contradicts God's prophecy. Now this promise in verse 29, Esau says to Jacob, be master of your brothers and may your mother's sons bow down to you. That the son shows that it's not referring to Esau in particular. It's talking about Esau's descendants, the Edomites. They're the ones that bow down to you, meaning your descendants. They bow down to Jacob's descendants, Israel. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished chapter 27, verses 1 through 29. That prepares us for our next audio, which will be Genesis chapter 27, verses 30 through 46, when Esau discovers that he has lost his birthright and he is not a happy camper. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoy this one.